And welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig.
And Renee is here.
And we have in our presence Zach Holman from GitHub. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. GitHub, that'd be a cool place to work.
It's not bad. It keeps me happy.
Yeah. So what's the Zach Holman story like?
For me personally, I've been there for almost 3 years now. I started out as a developer, and the last year or so I've been doing talks and meeting people and doing stuff like this. So I've kind of been doing that, hopefully getting back to development and actual work a little bit.
Wait, are you saying you're not enjoying talking to us?
I'm saying it's not actual work sometimes. It's not code getting done.
Wait, it's not value-adding.
It's not value-adding.
All right, it's value-adding a community of people out there.
You could argue that. I mean, it's a different type of work, for
all
sure.
All three or four that listen.
Yes.
Yeah, so 3-4 of you, if you're not using GitHub, use it now. There we go. Now it's been valuable.
Done deal.
So programming languages, what's your background there?
Nowadays I just hang around in the Ruby world. Some JavaScript, Node, stuff like that. Did my first bit of C, which for some reason, I hadn't done much C up until now, so I'm trying to. That's sort of my 2013 resolution.
2013 or 1993?
Well, it's the old stuff is now the new black. So going back.
They don't teach C at university anymore, Craig.
No,
they don't. They taught me Java, which is really, it's Java. So
So COBOL 2014, Fortran,
Prolog, Poplog.
Basically, to go forward, you must go back.
All right, cool. So you're out here. So we're at Yao, and you're out here to kind of tell us the GitHub story, like why it's an awesome place to work, right? And share a bit of the love.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting story, and one that some of the listeners might be aware of, because it's sort of one of those Silicon Valley type companies you kind of read about, and you go, surely it's not like that. Mm-hmm. Right? But you're here to tell me it is?
Yes, that's the story. I'm sticking to it. There's a lot of surreal stuff, I guess, if you come from like a more traditional way of working. But it's definitely... we've sort of been working that way for a number of years now, so it's been working out really well for us.
Hmm. So this model of working asynchronously, I knew I was going to get that wrong, which is kind of like, really the core of your talk. And that really revolves around people enjoying what they do, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a number of different things. I think a number of the factors lead up into people being able to enjoy doing work a lot more. But when I say synchronous stuff, it's mostly about not being very blocking, being blocked by somebody else to, say yes or no to you doing work, not getting distracted, sort of being able to work on stuff and being in the zone and stuff like that.
I mean, you called it an open source model. So some of the examples, no deadlines, no managers, no meetings, no standard working hours. Who wouldn't want to work there?
It may seem kind of crazy, but I think there are some people that it doesn't work as well for, just in terms of sometimes, people like to be a little bit more structured and stuff like that.
So it's not going
to
work at Walmart?
Not necessarily. I mean, sometimes it's like, walking into like a kid in a candy shop and just being like, oh, what do I do next? And, it does take
Walmart
a bit.
Walmart trying to go agile?
Not sorry. This isn't agile. This is a hyper-agile.
Hyper-agile? Yeah. That's a good word for it, I guess. I don't know.
So does it take, when you're recruiting people, does it take a certain type of person to really fit the mold of this culture? Because it's not, here's your spec, go away for 6 months and code this. You have to have some sort of vision to say, I really understand where GitHub is going.
Yeah. You have to kind of look out for people that are very, I guess, self-reliant or really interested in doing things for themselves or seeing a product all the way through. And for us, I mean, part of that is just seeing if you work really well in open source. It's kind of a good model of saying, well, you don't have to do open source, and if you end up liking it and building a really successful open source project, that's sort of a good sign for us that you'll probably work well in the realm of how we work too.
It reminded me a lot of Semco. That's probably me showing my age. One of the first and early organizations out there that really truly empowered its employees and took great effort to understand and enable them. Is scheduling a meeting actually a hate crime in the organization?
I was maybe facetious when I said that, but I just think meetings are really difficult to get right in terms of, you know, the amount of time people put into them. Like, there's no, unless you're really good in saying stop at 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, they can run really long. They're very directionless, and the major thing for us is that they're not. It's hard to record them really well, and if people are going off in a group of like six or eight or something, and
to record them,
yeah, in terms of. You know, the corollary would be chat scripts, where I can see what's happened in, you know, during this interview. I can go back into the chat room and see specifically...
Because of the bandwidth or because of the tagging.
It's, yeah, I mean, I can go back and see what exactly was discussed, and I can do that for, you know, 5 years ago when the company first started. And if we go into a meeting and we're, like, having discussions, it's a lot harder to do that. Even if you write down stuff after the meeting... What you think is important afterwards may not be what you really wanted to check out 2 months from now. When you say, oh man, there was something else I thought was not important back then, and I really wish I could figure out, you know, what happened. And you can sort of record stuff and, you know, tape audio and stuff like that, but it's harder to seek through and, you know, quickly find out stuff. And
So if you want to meet with some of your colleagues in the office, your preferred mechanism is use those tools, fire up a chat client.
Yeah, I mean, even if we're across the table, typically I'll just talk through chat because there's, you know, happens every day where, you know, I'll talk to you on chat and someone else over here, you know, in Europe or something is like, wait, I've done this exactly like 2 years ago. Let me tell you my experiences, and sort of that serendipitous discovery is kind of really nice sometimes.
So was that the big win that it was local, but as you got larger and got more distributed, that it scaled? Is that really one of the win points?
It's the scaling thing is kind of interesting. It wasn't. I don't think the founders necessarily intended it to work long term. It was more like, well, this is how we want to work today, and it sort of stemmed from like the coffee shop culture of everyone would go to a cafe and work that day, and they just talk on chat and stuff, and it's just sort of ended up growing without us. You know, we worked hard to make it grow, but I think the core of it sort of scaled for us really well, which may not have been intended, you know, way back when.
Yeah. I guess I probably maybe didn't word that right, but by having done that, when the time came for the company to grow large, it just scaled naturally.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're talking about hiring people, you know, from across the world and stuff, they just fit right in.
So, I mean, I must admit, when you were talking about the chat, the first thought that came to mind was around audio and why you didn't go down that path, or whether you tried it and it didn't work for certain reasons, because some of the more effective distributed teams that I've seen are ones that have both visual capability and audio capability and chat capability.
Mm-hmm. So, for us, I guess, it's a couple different... areas of communication. If you're talking about working on a project together, very sort of bare bones, basic, like, you know, how should this line of code be? I think chat and email and stuff like that is almost a better medium in some cases, because people can sit down and correct themselves as they type. And, you know, in cases of talking out loud, like I am now, you sort of ramble and you don't really get to the point right away. And I think chat and stuff like that can actually end up focusing ideas to be much more specific and helpful to people. When you're talking about much more broader stuff, we do have something every Friday, excuse me, in the office in San Francisco called Beer 30, where...
I like it already.
Yeah. Balls beer. That's on Friday afternoons.
I thought it was because of the 30. There you go.
But basically, one of the founders, usually our CEO, Tom, will get up and talk about very high-level things. Like, here are the people we hired this week. These are the features that we shipped. And this is sort of what we want to do going forward. And those are very high-level. And all of that stuff we record with multiple cameras and stuff like that. And we actually get transcripts so we can search those as well. And from that perspective, we can send those out to everyone else who's not in the office right away.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, engaged that way.
But sometimes you've got a detailed problem, and just working it through verbally with someone can help out. What do you use on those occasions? You still revert to the chat?
Usually people end up just doing chat still. There are cases where, usually if you're trying to come up with solutions, kind of like the brainstorming phase rather than the fixing stuff. Sometimes you'll end up with people Skyping somebody in, or there are some cases where people will do like pair programming over Skype or anything like that, and that works fairly well. But I think that's, for us, we end up doing that much less than other companies, and I'm not necessarily sure what the reason that is, otherwise than we like chat a lot.
So as a company, and we talked about, it was a startup. It started incredibly, incredibly small, as it was all startups do. And now, what, you're a couple hundred employees?
132.
So reasonably large, not as large as some organizations that many of us have worked for in the past. How have you maintained this culture going forward? Is it just purely been around hiring, or because surely there's been some challenges?
Yeah, it's a combination of a lot of things. One, as I mentioned in my talk, we build a lot of tools to help us get rid of like the nitty gritty of growing people. As long as we can build tools to help us just automate all the tedious work away, that lets us focus on actual doing work and sort of work in the same frame we've been working the whole time. I don't know. I guess it's sort of just grown step by step, and I think we have a really strong core of the founders and the directors of the company and the people who have been around for a long time of like, this is how we want to work and this is what's really worked for us, and sort of having those examples of the people really kind of help you, fall in line, I guess.
Okay. So the founders, and I guess most of the staff when you started out, were very developer focused. As you've grown, I'm assuming there's been a need to bring in some of those more fluffy titles that us as coders don't necessarily relate to, so HR and
you don't
and
need them. They didn't bring them in. Just moving on.
we have a pretty decent. We're still really heavily technical compared to pretty much every other company. I have no idea what the numbers are right now, but we're probably 60 to 70 developers, 15 to 20 designers, and then the rest is like, HR, make sure our office doesn't explode, finance stuff. So
someone's got to keep the power and lights on, right?
Yes, that is true.
So I guess where I was going with that is how do you keep those guys? Because developers, we can come back to things like XP, we can come back to 37 signals, all those kind of things that have been around now for a number of years that we can relate to. How do you hire a HR person and say to them, we're coders, we live for code?
It's kind of difficult sometimes. We've lucked out and found some people that I think identify with
the mentality.
Yeah, or if they don't necessarily understand it as much because they haven't coded, but they still understand that it's important to work the way that we do. And I think that's been really beneficial. A lot of our sort of office people came from other startups that worked like us, or in some level work kind of differently, so that's kind of been helpful. But it is really difficult to find people who the last thing we want is to hire like 50 business people who have no idea what the hell to do. We have like a handful of salespeople for our enterprise product, and most of their job is just to tell people no, which is kind of the opposite of how salespeople work. It's just like, can we add this feature? It's like, no, we'll add it if it makes sense. And it's finding those people is really difficult, but it would kind of sink us if we didn't spend the time to find those people.
So, the organization sounds extremely agile or lean. Is that something that you'd actually label yourselves with, or is it just more common sense in your thoughts?
I would say we definitely don't subscribe to any sort of development methodology, because on a very basic level of like TDD or BDD or whatever the case is, we're not necessarily anti anything. We're not really pro anything.
Yeah.
It's like, if it works for you and it helps you do your job, sure, do test first development, and that's totally fine with us, as long as the product ends up being fine. We have some people who do very pair programming based, even remote pair programming, and that's just how they work every day, and it's like, I don't care, like that's totally fine.
So do you think because you are at your heart a developer company, building products for developers, that's helped this structure, as opposed to maybe being like a Facebook?
Pretty massively, I would say. Not to say that it's probably the only thing type of deal, but I think it's helped us in a lot of ways. I was giving a talk at a small startup in San Francisco just over lunch, and they made like maternity, some sort of maternity like website online, and I look around and it's all like, you know, 30-year-old dudes. And one of them asks, like, yeah, what happens if you don't really use your product and stuff? And I'm like, I don't know. It's really worked for us. And I think there's different levels that you can take from it, but it's definitely a good position to be in where you can just dog food everything.
Mm. Is there any companies in Silicon Valley that you guys aspire to be more like, that you look at and you go, we're doing pretty well, but actually those guys are doing something pretty cool?
It's not necessarily, I guess aspire is kind of the wrong word. Back when Valve leaked their handbook earlier this year, that was more of a matter of reassurance that there's a bigger company. I guess they're not even Silicon Valley, they're in Seattle area or something, but you know, they're 300 some people, and they basically ended up working the exact same way that we worked, or very similarly. And it was very comforting to know that, you know, you can scale up the organization a lot more and still use some of these same ideals. And then, you know, we've been reading a lot about like Gore, and they've been doing similar things on a much greater scale. So it's kind of, you know, just reassuring to know that, you know, we're not just crazy people running around. Well, that may be true anyway, but
There's multiple of you.
Yeah. Hopefully there'll be more at some point, but as more people figure out that this works. But.
So I was curious as I was listening to it, and I felt the message was very quite strong about the environment that you're in and how positive it has been in the engagement for yourself and for others at GitHub. And I wondered, was the people that were in that audience the right people for that message? Because there are a whole pile of developers who are working for large organizations and don't have a lot of control over how they're being managed. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them if you could say something to enable them, or some sort of change that they can make to get them out of this?
I'm sure you get that question all the time, right? Like, dude, it must be great to work there. I can't.
Yeah, possibly. You're lucky you.
It's interesting, though, because I've been giving these talks sort of for a year or so now, and I've had a number of people come up to me and say, you know, I'm at GE, which is a massive, massive company, and just the fact that we understood that somebody else was working this way let me go to my manager and say, you know, can we be more flexible on our hours, or can we do something else slightly different? And I think it's more a matter of understanding what you can change and then changing it kind of from within. And I would like to hope that most teams are at least open to being able to change some aspect of stuff. There's some level where managers will just be like, yeah, I don't care about that. If it makes it easier, better to build, you know, go ahead and do it. There's definitely, you're less free to do that in larger companies, but I think that, you know, I'd hope that there's some level where you can start making some changes.
So maybe the no meetings one. That's an easy one to start off with, potentially, right?
Maybe.
Ultimately, they could sell that because there's maths behind context switching. And
let's have a meeting to discuss that.
Yeah. It depends on the organization, though, because some huge organizations have really liberal work policies and stuff, which is kind of shocking. And some of them that you would think would be really, you know, forward-thinking are very stuck in the old days. Yeah.
So I really love Beer 30. I hadn't heard that one. If you said that in talk, I missed it. But the other one I really liked that I picked up was the hack houses idea. Mm-hmm. What's all that about?
So the hack houses, GitHub Destinations is the technical terminology for it, I guess.
Hack houses sounds so much cooler.
Yeah, it is kind of nice. So it stems,
it's better than crack houses.
There's no crack going on that I know of. But it stemmed from last summer. The craze at GitHub right now is techno. A lot of people are learning DJing just because it's fun and really kind of a nice way to challenge your brain and stuff. So people ended up getting really antsy, like, let's all just go to Berlin for, you know, a couple weeks or a month or something, go to a lot of the techno houses and stuff out there and just, you know, kind of hack and build cool stuff together. So that was kind of not GitHub, but it was mostly, you know, a dozen or so of us ended up just going out on our own. It ended up being really awesome because you end up working with people that you wouldn't normally otherwise. Mm-hmm. And even though, you know, I know these people, I don't really know them, you know, spending a couple weeks with somebody in a very close, and especially in a foreign land, kind of changes how you work together. So that sort of stemmed from that. And the first official one we had was in Hawaii, where we just got a house, and it's not that much money if we were really remote and, a whole bunch of people, and we each flew ourselves, but the get up paid for the house. And there was a great example of we had nothing to do because there was nothing surrounding us, so we just basically packed together and, played Cards Against Humanity at night. And it was just really very productive and just kind of a fun way to get to know your coworkers that you wouldn't normally otherwise. So.
The only concern I had when I heard it was, that sounds great if you're young and unattached, mm-hmm. but if you've got a family, and I know that you explained that it's a very family-oriented organization, but mm-hmm. if you've got a family, you're less likely to be able to go to those sorts of venues and do
potentially. I mean, it's definitely a little bit trickier to make that stuff work. The main guy who organized our Hawaii house went with his wife, and she basically was like one of us. I don't know how she dealt with all these nerdy people around the whole time. But it's kind of fun that if, your partner is able to take time off of work or, make that happen, that's totally fine too. But it is kind of, travel is definitely hard to make work, I guess.
You dropped a bit of a saying when you're talking about the family stuff that working less makes better code.
Mm-hmm.
What's behind that? Is it because you're working more productively that is behind that statement?
I guess when I say that, I think it's a couple different things. One is we kind of embrace the idea of limitations a lot. And if you start from the beginning and say, well, I only have, X reasonable amount of hours to work this week, then you sort of restructure on, what can I do this week that actually matters in a small amount of time. And I think if you, that sort of reprioritization of your hours can end up making a better use of those hours. And the other side of that is just in terms of creativity and stuff. If you agree with the idea that code is necessarily problem solving, that you need to be very creative to approach that as problem solving, you're just better when you're not banging your head on the keyboard because you're super tired and it's been 20 hours that day of code. And if people are much more fresh about doing that sort of stuff, I think they just generate better code overall.
So your Twitter handle's @Holman. I happen to notice that you have 19,000 Twitter followers.
Yeah, I don't know where they came from.
What demigod did you pray to for that? What happened?
I don't know. I'm pretty boring nowadays. I don't tweet that much. I've been busy in Australia and forget about Twitter a little bit. But I don't know. It's, write some things and do some talks and, just keep doing little things over and over again, right?
So the last thing I took away from your talk was you talked about all the internal tools and you mentioned those earlier that you built. You made kind of the comment that you did some sort of measuring to make sure it's something that they actually add value in the long run. So what do you do internally to make sure that the internal tools you build are actually helping you and not hindering you, which happens, sometimes in legacy organizations where you think something, we'll create this database over here, but in fact it just doesn't work.
I guess I didn't necessarily mean it measuring as much as looking back, it's been really difficult to find any sort of time where time spent working on some internal tool wasn't worth it in the end. Just in terms of sheer amount of, if I build this tool for everybody, that's for, if I save everyone 5 minutes a week, 5 minutes times 132 people ends up being pretty substantial savings.
So is that just a gut feel based on as opposed to some strict measure?
Yeah, and if you just look around, like our support tool, for instance, is a dream to work with at this point compared to how we used to work earlier. And as sort of a direct result because of that, I end up doing a whole bunch of more issues and tickets because it's fun to sort of check stuff off of lists and deal with all this stuff. And without that sort of really positive reaction towards our own internal tools, they don't get used as much, people don't share as many things, people don't get as many things of work done, and I think that's just sort of been a really good, solid basis for us overall. And it's something that we've been hiring people just to work on, internal tools, internal culture a lot recently, which I'm really excited about.
Cool. You also mentioned the side project culture. There's been a lot of talk in the last couple of years, everyone's aware of the 20% time at Google, and I'll do what you did before, I'll do the 20% time with my fingers in the air, !!
It happens. It really happens.
Yeah, so does it really happen? What benefits does it really bring?
So we internally just call it the 100% time. because, I mean, since we can, nice. Yeah, since we can dog food so strongly, you can basically work on whatever you want, and, you know, that's basically 20% time taken to the extreme. And it really does work really well for us. I was saying in my talk earlier is that the saddest thing that ever happens to companies when they end up facing troubles is that the first thing to go are the hack days, the side projects, mm-hmm. whatever they want, because, you know, we have to get this feature out the door, and that's the most important thing. We'll get to that stuff later, and you never get back to that stuff. So since the beginning, and especially in the last, like, 3 or 4 years, people have been really, you know, realizing that this is a really good thing, and supporting people and building and doing cool stuff, because it's a whole bunch of different things. Like, you know, a lot of our side projects in new languages we've never used before is kind of like a good test trial for doing it in production for real, and having sort of that fun outlet to do that stuff. You end up learning a whole bunch more, you end up being more creative, and then just overall a whole bunch of the stuff we use every day, like Hubot, all of our deployment infrastructure, all of our testing infrastructure, that all stemmed from somebody saying, you know, I just want to hack on this for a little bit, and that's just been really, really productive for us.
So because you've got that culture, I guess it means you don't have to sit around and go, you could do 20% time, bust it, but it must be, you know, like, for the sake of GitHub. It's like, you're all there and you know that, you know,
where the gaps are. Mm-hmm. You work on them, right?
Yeah. It's for every person that comes up to me at this conference saying, man, you should really fix this. Like, we've known about that for years because, you know, we know it sucks. And then you can let people just go off and, you know, fix stuff.
Oh, the only last question I had was around the comments you made. Probably your greatest challenge is working in teams. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you could elaborate a little bit more on that.
So the main problem with teams that we have, we sort of do organize into teams at this point. We have, like, the enterprise team, the GitHub for Mac team, Windows team, and we have been in teams, but the problem is trying to figure out what that means, I guess, because our biggest fear is that, you know, we put you on, like, the Windows team, for example, and you feel like, oh god, all I can do is just be stuck on this team, and even though you may love working on that team, even the best job ends up having, you know, it's warts sometimes, and it's just the same stuff over and over again. So we don't want to silo people off and say, like, you're stuck on this, and there's no way to just transfer off into fun things sometimes.
But I thought team members self-opted into where they worked. Is that...
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
For example, I was hired to work on GitHub FI, which is our predecessor to GitHub Enterprise, our enterprise offering. And I was on that basically the one-man team for like a year or so. And then I ended up just kind of burning out on it because I was just like... You know, I've done this for a long time. I kind of want to do some other stuff. And the founders were really cool and just saying, yeah, just do some other stuff. We'll find somebody else for the team.
So you get hired for a role, you do your time, and then...
If you want. Yeah. I mean, it's some people are totally happy because they're really fascinated with, you know, whatever they're working on. Mm-hmm. And we don't necessarily hire for teams sometimes. It's more like, you know, this may be a good fit for you. Is this interesting to you? Or, you know, we're really interested in you. What do you want to work on? It's just, I think we're trying to figure out the best way to battle the idea that teams are really good because they help you focus on stuff, but teams are also bad because they can also draw you in and get you kind of stuck in a rut. And I think there's a really good balancing point between the two. We just have to figure out what the best way to do that is.
Which takes us right back around to where we started, which is that you decided that you want to get back to coding, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Code is fun. So
cool. Well, it's been awesome. If people want to follow your travels and what you're up to, what's the best place to find you on the web?
Yeah, ping me at Holman on Twitter or ZachHolman.com. I do a bunch of posts and stuff like that, usually goofy ones.
Cool. And for our US listeners, or I guess you've got places around the world too, assume GitHub is always looking for good people, right?
We're always looking for good people, mm-hmm. no matter where you are.
So where do they find that? Is it GitHub.com?
Yeah, GitHub.com. Send us an email, GitHub.com/about. We'll show you our open job positions and stuff. So hit me up, have a chat.
Awesome. Enjoy the rest of the time in Australia. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.